Good morning. If you're visiting with us, we consider you our honored guest, thankful that you're with us today. And today we are ending a seven-week series on the book of Genesis. And in this series, we've been tracing God's work from the beginning of creation until now. And what I want to do this morning is to simply connect it all together. How many of you have seen the movie Forrest Gump? Same Forrest Gump, okay. So, goofy movie, but classic, meaningful movie. But what happens in that movie, the way it starts out, if you remember, is the opening scene is kind of this feather going in the air. And do you remember how the movie ends? That feather, again, it's tracing that feather coming down. And the idea is that it's signifying this theme from the beginning and bringing it all to close at the end. And many musicals are this way too, or plays, or other movies, as you kind of have this opening melody that takes place at the beginning of the show or of the movie or whatever it might be, and then at the end that kind of comes in. You can see this with TV shows as well. The Office is known for doing that in the TV show. As you, at the beginning, you might have this opener, or you might have this thing that happens at the beginning, and at the end, to signify a close, it kind of ties it all together, no matter how random whatever that last scene might be, but it's connecting it together. And so this morning, what I want to do is, as we look at this series, I want to tie it all together. But we're not just going to do that by summarizing it all once again and what we've already covered. But I believe the story of Joseph already does that as it brings all the themes of Genesis together. So as a reminder, where we've been, though, so it all makes sense and fits together, is that God created the heavens and the earth. He saw the chaotic waters and all that he had made, and he brings order to it, gives it meaning, gives it purpose. And what he does is he creates life. He makes the dry land appear. He brings order to the chaotic waters of creation. And then from there, the crowning point of his creation is that he creates humanity, male and female. And he creates them in his image, as his image bearers, to be his partners. And what God's intentions were to bless and to provide and to bring goodness to humanity. But he also intended to partner with them so that they might rule over creation with him and to be his partners in bringing blessedness and goodness to this earth. And God took them and he placed them in a garden. And scripture is called the Garden of Eden. And this was a place where man, humanity, male and female, could have fellowship and partnership with God as they spent time walking in the garden with him and enjoying fellowship with God. However, the story goes, humanity decides to take matters into their own hands in order to bring goodness and blessedness to their own life. And they go and try to grasp of the forbidden tree where God told them not to eat of this tree, but they do it anyways. And innocence is taken away. And because of that, death and sin entered the world, and the world has never been the same. And we see evidence of that all around us. So Adam and Eve were exiled from the garden. And then shortly after that, they saw the impact, the consequences of sin and death through their own interaction, or their own son's interaction, as their son Cain kills Abel, and they taste death for the very first time. And they find out that, yes, sin does lead to death. You will certainly die if you eat of the forbidden fruit. And then from there, you have this spiral that we trace throughout Genesis, from Genesis chapters 4 through chapters, all the way through 11. But in the middle there, you have the story of the ark, where humanity gets so evil that God has to bring justice to this earth. And that's what he does. And then from there, you have the story of the Tower of Babel, and you think after the flood, everything's going to get better. The sin problem with humanity is going to have a fresh start. We're going to get somewhere. But even in the story of the Tower of Babel, you see that it's not so. So from Genesis 4 to 11, you have this downward spiral of humanity getting progressively worse. And as more technology is invented, there's a greater capacity to do what is evil. And then we're introduced to a man named Abraham in Genesis chapter 12. And God comes to Abraham. He calls him to follow him. And he says, I'm going to bless you. And I'm going to bless your family. I'm going to make you into a great nation. I'm going to give you a great land. And it's going to be through your family that I'm going to bless all the other families. And this actually goes back to a promise that was made in the garden, is that when humanity first sinned, God did not forsake humanity, but he gave them a promise of a seed that would come through a woman who would one day crush the head of a serpent. And for the very first time, God starts enacting that promise, and that's brought through the family of Abraham, that it would be through Abraham's lineage that this seed would come to crush the head of a serpent. And this promise is given to Abraham. And then that promise is given to his son Isaac. And as if you were here last week, that promise is then given to Jacob. And then Jacob, he had 12 sons of his own. But if you ever, but in the story, what we find out is that Jacob actually had a favorite son out of those 12, and his name was Joseph. And as we look at the story of, see here. If we can get us on track, I'll let y'all go ahead. Look at the story. I'm just going to make it worse. All right. When we look at the story of Joseph, what we see happen is that, like we said, Jacob has 6 sons. He favors Joseph. And he favored Joseph so much so that he actually gives Joseph sort of this letterman jacket to wear around his brothers. He gives him this ornate robe or this jacket that signifies that he's the favorite child. Right? Probably many of us have experienced kind of the feuds between siblings, sometimes more serious than others, or maybe it's joking where you say, oh, I'm the favorite child. You know, my parents, you know, there's just me and my sister, and so my parents would always say, you're the favorite son and you're the favorite daughter, which is kind of a cop-out if you got to ask me. But Jacob wasn't shy about it. I mean, he gave him a coat and said, this is the favorite. And Joseph wasn't shy about that either, and he would wear that coat around, kind of signifying that. And there seems to be indications in the story that, you know, he showed that off. Well, as the story goes on, you find out Joseph starts having these dreams about him ruling over his siblings. Now, as a child, I had those dreams too of ruling over my sibling. But we might call those daydreams. Joseph's were for real. And it was actually going to come into fruition. Now, if we were to have those dreams, wisdom would probably tell you to keep it to yourself. But Joseph didn't do that. He went wearing his leatherman jacket, and explain that to his brothers, how one day he's going to be ruling over them. And as you would imagine, they didn't really like that. They didn't sit well with them. And so what they eventually end up doing is they plot to kill him. But then they decide, no, that's too bad. We can't do that. And so instead, they end up selling him into slavery. And so they make the deal, they send him off into slavery, and they take back his jacket or his robe, the robe of many colors, as you might have heard it been called, and they cover it in an animal's blood and rip it all up, and they take it back to their father Jacob, and Jacob then assumes that he has been killed by a wild beast and grieves over his son Joseph. And so through the slave trade, Joseph ends up finding himself in Egypt. And there's a bunch of ups and downs to the story. It's a really long story, kind of the second half of the book of Genesis, where we'll just say this, is that Joseph comes to be the second in command over all of Egypt through a series of events. And now he's given this position of power. And not only is he second in command, but he is put over this effort to prepare for an incoming famine. And this famine is going to go all over the world. And as he's in Egypt, Egypt was the current superpower of that time. And Egypt would be the hub where all the people all over the earth would come to in order to find food. And so Joseph was in charge of that effort in order to, for 7 years, to store up food, to provide for the coming famine, for this famine that would also last for 7 years. And so Joseph's over that effort. Well, we fast forward probably over a decade, and we come to the story that we find today. And where we're at in the story now is we're a decade past these events. Joseph's second in command. The famine has come. And Jacob's family, as they're in the land of Canaan, they feel the pain of the famine. And so what Jacob does is he sends his older sons over to Egypt. And as they're there, they're at the very booth in which Joseph is directing all of these works in order to provide for those coming. And what happens is that they don't recognize Joseph, but Joseph recognizes them. And again, through another series of events that takes place, eventually Joseph reveals himself to his brothers, and they're just totally taken back by it, like they never thought they would see him again. And now they had something to be fearful of, because the tables have turned, and now it is Joseph with the position of power. He had the power to execute and to destroy them. But that's not what he does. Instead, Joseph partners with God, and he forgives his brothers for what he's done, for what they've done to him. And he ends up sending for his father Jacob, and the entire family moves to Egypt in the midst of this famine. And Joseph plans to provide for his family in all of this. But shortly after Jacob and the family move to Egypt, Jacob's health fails, he's old in age, and he passes away. And in this context in which Jacob passes away, there's a fear that comes over the brothers of Joseph. And this is not surprising. They're thinking, our patriarch, our leader of our family has now passed away. There's nothing to keep me from, or there's nothing to keep Joseph from executing us now that our father Jacob is gone. And so they come to Joseph with, you know, this story that almost seems fabricated, saying, you know, when our father passed away, you know, he kind of left this will, and he said that you've got to forgive us. Okay? And then they come to him, and they actually and seem to be genuinely out of fear. They fall before him. If we can go to the next slide, please. And it says, and his brothers also came and fell down before him and said, behold, we are your servants. Now, whether or not this whole story is fabricated or not, they seem to genuinely out of fear fall before him and say, we are at your mercy. We will become what we sold you off to. We will become your servants. We sold you to be a servant, but now we will become your servants if you will spare our lives. Now, what they don't understand is that Joseph has already made up his mind on this matter long before this, is that he had given himself over to partnership with God. He had committed to give things over to God's hands. And that's what we see in the very next verse, in verse 19. It says, but Joseph said to him, don't be afraid. Am I in the place of God? Now, if it was any of us in the situation, we would probably struggle a lot. You've got a position of power. You've got the ability to punish those who literally ruined your life, it seems. You know, the parts of the story we didn't talk about is the years in prison Joseph served, the years in slavery, the years of oppression that he went through to get to where God brought him. If you look at the story, there's a lot that Joseph went through because of the actions of his brothers. But what he says here, he says, I'm not in the place of God. And what we see is that Joseph had a self-awareness. He had ability to see that vengeance was not his to take. But instead, he knew that he was to give this over to God. As although he had a place of power, he realized he was not in the place of God to carry out the vengeance that maybe he was tempted to take. But he didn't. And by the way, any of us would be tempted to take that vengeance. So if someone had done us so wrong, and now he had the ability to at least put him into prison. Maybe you don't kill him, but put him into prison and have them serve out a sentence that was fair. But that's not what Joseph does. And this says a lot about Joseph. And John Walton, in this quote here, he says this about Joseph, and I think he nails it. He says, Joseph not only has a firm picture of who God is, but has the equally important understanding of what he himself is not. And that's in such contrast to what we see about these different people throughout the story of Genesis. If Adam and Eve had just seen who God was and what they were not, they would have been obedient. If Cain would have seen himself not as executioner for the justice that he felt was demanded to him, the story would have been different. But Joseph recognizes where he is, that his place, even though he is literally second in command over all the earth as the superpower of Egypt and could execute any amount of justice that he wanted to. But in the end, he decided that that's not who I am. Ultimately, God is the judge. And that's not ours to take. And that's not our lesson today, but man, isn't there something for us to learn right there and to walk away with, to know that when we go through the personal issue, someone does us wrong, and we want to take some type of act to execute justice on our own behalf. We need to remember that it's not our place. And in fact, the ethic of Jesus calls us to turn the other cheek, to do good to those who harm us. And that's what we see Joseph do. In the next verse, Joseph explains something to them. He says, "You've intended to harm me. You've intended to do, as some translations say, to do what is evil. You meant to do evil. And we see that all in the story of Joseph. All in the story of how the brothers sold him into slavery and originally intended to kill him, didn't care what happened to him, but they allowed their jealousy to, at least from the outside in, to ruin his life, to put him through all kinds of unimaginable suffering. Prison systems, you know, nobody wants to go to prison, but prison was very, very different back then than what it is right now. I can tell you this, there wasn't air conditioning, I'll tell you that much. And you can imagine the kind of suffering, as it kind of describes him being in sort of a dungeon during his times of prison. Right? They intended all this harm against him. They literally sold him into a system of oppression. He says, "You intended to harm me, to do what is evil." But then in the next part of the verse, he says, "But God intended it for good." God intended it for good. What you meant for harm, or what you meant for evil, God meant for good, as other translations might say. And when you look through the story of Joseph, that's exactly what happens. We obviously can't look at each verse, but you see God's providence and God's care and God's movement and God's work all throughout the story of Joseph. It's about from Genesis 37 to Genesis 50. And in each chapter, you see God moving in the story, where Joseph finds himself in one, you know, kind of downhill spiral because of actions outside of his own control. You see God working in that to raise him up again, to cause him to gain favor in someone's eyes. You see it all throughout the story of Joseph, is that God intending to work for good on the behalf of Joseph and bringing him to where he ends up being. And he says, and it's for this purpose, to accomplish now what is being done. If we can go to the next slide, it says, for the saving of many lives. Is ultimately, Joseph is able to bless all other nations through the work that he's able to do in Egypt by providing food in the midst of the famine. And not only that, but he's able to save the lives of his own family, right? And so Abraham's family is able to continue on, to move on to the future, to be a family that blesses all other family because of what God accomplished through Joseph. In this story, is that promise, the seed of the woman, will move on, that we see back in Genesis chapter 3:15, that can move forward because God worked in Joseph's life and Jacob's family was saved from this famine. So if what you intended for harm, God has accomplished for good. And if we were to stop there, all would be fine. Joseph says, go on with your lives. I'm not going to harm you. I'm not going to seek revenge. You know, the story, we would say, was very grace-filled. But Joseph goes a step further than that. In the next verse, what we see, he says, "So then, do not be afraid. I will provide for you and your children." And he reassured them and spoke kindly to them. Joseph goes leaps and bounds further than what he needed to do. Not only did he not do them harm for what they had done to him, but he actually forgives them and does them good, seeks the good of his brothers, seeks the good of those who had harmed him. And the reason Joseph was able to do this is because he had partnered with God. He had made it up in his mind to be God's partner in bringing goodness and blessedness to this earth and forgiving those who had done him harm. And that's something we also can walk away with. And that's what Jesus calls us to do. Not just to turn the other cheek, but to do good to those who do you harm. And we see that all in this story. And then the story goes on from there and kind of wraps up to bring it to a close. But what ends up happening is decades probably after this, Joseph himself comes to find that his life is ending. And he and his brothers have been in Egypt for this time, and Joseph has been providing for their families, doing good to them. And at the end of the story, it says, "Then Joseph said to his brothers, 'I'm about to die, but God will surely come to your aid and take you up out of this land to the land he promised on oath to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob.'" And I wanted us to see this first is because we see that this ties it together. As Joseph is ending his life, he says, listen, this has all come to this point so that God could keep his promise to you. All of this mess, all the harm that you intended to do to me, all of this journey that has brought their family into Egypt to be saved from this famine, he said, all of that has been to bring out God's promise to Abraham, which of course we know goes back to that promise in Genesis 3:15, to crush the head of the serpent. And so he brings us back to this promise, which is sort of the central focus of the story of the book of Genesis. And then we have the last verse here, verse 26. So Joseph died at the age of 110, and after they embalmed him, he was placed in a coffin in Egypt. And so where we end this story in Genesis is God's promises are continuing to be fulfilled. And this plan for redemption through salvation, through the seed of the woman, where this man would come and crush the head of the serpent, that's moving forward. That promise given to Abraham that through their family, that seed would come and they would be a blessing to all other families, that's moving forward to the next stage of the redemptive story of the Bible, which picks up in the story of Exodus in Egypt. But as we look at our text today, and we look at the story of Joseph, and we wrap up looking at the story of Genesis, I want to go back and focus here on this verse, back in verse 20. And here of the ESV listed. It says, as for you, Joseph talking to his brothers, he says, as for you, you meant evil against me. The NIV says, you meant to do me harm, but God meant it for good, to bring about that many people should be kept alive or be saved as they are today. Now, of course, this has the initial application to the story of Joseph, as it was intended, that God, although they meant him harm, God meant it for good, and God brought about his purposes despite their best efforts to take matters into their own hands. It applies specifically to the story of Joseph. But when you look at a bigger application, as I've already mentioned, I believe this also goes back to God's original promise back in the garden, to Genesis 3:15, that God would bring a seed, that and this man who would come from the seed of a woman to crush the head of the serpent. And I believe that this goes back to that very same promise. This promise that was then given to Abraham and to Isaac and then to Jacob. And then now this promise is being pushed forward as God's people are led into Egypt, into the next stage of this story. That's the bigger application of this verse. And then one more, or not one more, I've got two more, but another layer to all of this is the fact that we see that through Joseph's partnering with God, that he's able to partner in to the work of redemption that God is all about in bringing goodness and blessedness to this earth. The story of Genesis kind of begins with this fall in the garden, and then you have one brother triumph over another brother, Cain killing his brother Abel as the result of sin entering the world and as the result of Cain refusing to partner with God and live in obedience. But then when you come to the end of the book of Genesis, you now have a brother who has been done harm by his other brothers. And rather than taking vengeance into his own hands, you see this man Joseph bend his knee to God, partner with him, and do the work of redemption as he forgives those who had done harm to him. And in that way, Joseph joins into this grand work of God of partnership and bringing goodness and blessedness to this earth. And then ultimately, this story of Joseph and this verse right here in verse 20 is all about just God bringing forth his good purposes to his creation, taking chaos and darkness and turning into goodness and blessedness. And John Walton, who's one of the most accepted scholars on the book of Genesis, he says, God's revelation of his mastery and control of his creation is the message of Genesis. From the beginning, as God takes chaos and brings order, gives it purpose, and gives it executes his control over creation, and we see that carried out through the book of Genesis, and it culminates in the story of Joseph as that story is moved forward into the next stage of redemptive history. But then we look at this story. We see we see that God working in every story that we've looked at so far and bringing control over His creation, bringing control over human affairs to bring about His goodness. In the next slide, we see over and over again through the story of Genesis is that what God intends for evil, or what humanity intends for evil, God works for good. Right? What Adam and Eve had intended for evil, God worked for good. What Cain intended for evil over his brother Abel and over his family, God intended for good. What the people of Noah's day intended for evil, God worked for good. What the people of the Tower of Babel intended for good, God worked, or intended for evil, God worked for good. For good. What Abraham and Sarah intended for evil over Hagar, God was in the background working it all together for good. And what Jacob intended for evil over Esau and his family and over others in his life, God worked it for good. And what Joseph's brothers had intended for evil over Joseph, God intended it for good. No matter what we do, no matter how much we give ourselves over to sin and how much it grips our heart and whatever evil we intend on this earth, God has control over all of human affairs on this earth. And He is working to save His creation, to redeem it, to bring goodness and blessedness to it. And ultimately, we see this in Romans 8:28, as the Apostle Paul, many, many generations after, said this. He says, and we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love Him, who have been called according to His purpose. And from this passage, we draw this truth in the next slide. It says, and God works for the good of those who love Him and seek Him. And we believe that. We see that in the story of Joseph, is that today, if you are diligently seeking the Lord and loving Him, He is working on your behalf. And He's calling us to a purpose, to join in with Him, because we are invited, so we've been going through this whole series, next slide please, is that we were created in the image of God to rule over the creation of God. And that simply to say this is that you are created to be God's partner on this earth, to bring that goodness and blessedness we've been talking about in the series, to bring that to earth, to partner, to be a part of what God is doing in the world. And like Joseph, we participate in that mission to partner with God. The next slide. That we were created to partner and have a relationship with God. We live into that when we forgive those who've done us harm. When we seek reconciliation with our family. We live into this purpose to partner with God when we seek to do good to those who are needy. When we seek to do works like Matthew 25 yesterday, where so many of our church members gathered together to sort items, to be able to help those in need, right? And doing those things, we're partnering with God. When we, as parents seek to disciple their own children and to bring them up in the Lord, you're joining with God, you're partnering with Him. When you seek to invite a neighbor and to share the news of Jesus with them, to disciple, to make disciples, right? You're partnering with God. When we go over to places like Mexico and do the work that's involved in Baja Missions, right? You're joining in. You're partnering with God to do what He is intending to do, to bring goodness and blessedness to this world. And you're invited to join into that. You were created for this purpose. And the next slide, please. But I want to also tell you this morning is that maybe you haven't been diligently seeking after the Lord. Maybe you haven't been living a life that's been going towards Him and loving Him. Then here's the good news for you as well, that God is still working on your behalf. And we see that illustrated in the story of Joseph, is that not only did Joseph save his family through the work of the famine, but God was also using Joseph to provide for the entire world as they came, that many lives would be saved through the work of Joseph. And so what we learn in that and through the whole book of Genesis is that God is seeking the good of His creation. And so maybe you haven't been seeking the Lord. Maybe it's been a while since you've been to church and you've been out of it. You haven't been seeking Him. You haven't been focused on those things. What you need to know is this, is that God has been seeking you. He has been working for your good. And perhaps that's what brought you here this morning, is that God nudged you to be here, to be a part of what's going on here at Northeast. Or maybe you're here through our online service. And maybe for whatever reason, you felt compelled to join in to the service today. And maybe God brought you here for this purpose, to hear this message of the gospel, to hear what we're invited to do, to be partners of God as His image bearers. And maybe you're listening to this months or years from now. You found it on our online page. And maybe this is your invitation to step back into what God is doing in the world, because He's been working for your good on your behalf. This morning, in just a moment, as we begin to sing, I want to extend the invitation today. If you'd like to respond to God today for whatever reason, maybe it's to become a disciple of Jesus, to practice some of the ethics that we've seen today, and to live into God's purpose for your life, and to live into what God is doing through the church in this world, we would love to sit down and talk with you. Maybe you just have a concern. Maybe you've got a prayer. Maybe you're going through some of these struggles and you're needing to be encouraged to continue to entrust yourself to God, to continue to partner with Him, to continue to do the work of redemption in your relationships and in your friendships and in your neighborhoods. You can come forward as we sing too. Or today, there'll be an elder at the end of our service in our prayer room as you enter the Kidmen